Good morning. I'm opening the Joint Committee on Ways and Means, Subcommittee on Human Services. It's Wednesday. And it's Wednesday, April 25th. Today's my son's birthday. I better call him. Public hearing on Senate Bill 5527, and we're open this morning for public testimony. And I see that Representative Morissette is here, so I will call Representative Morissette up, and I understand that he has some individuals that he wants to bring up with him. I would also, just a little housekeeping item, if there's anyone in the audience who has a cell phone, would you please make sure that it is in the off position? Welcome, Representative Morissette.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair and Member of the Committee. For the record, my name is Bill Morissette, representative from District 42 in Springfield. And I have, I'm here today to talk on behalf of the budget for public health. And I have Dr. Sarah Hendrickson with me, who will give some detailed testimony, and Karen Gillette, who is a coordinator of Lane County Public Health. And I simply would start by saying that we do have a proposal that will reach your committee in a week that advocates using part of the tobacco settlement fund, which is unallocated, for the $15 million. If you can't find it with general funds, although I personally feel that there's going to be such a demand on general fund money, if there's any left by higher ed and other people, that I guess I would advocate for a use of the tobacco settlement money, because it is for health purposes. What you'll hear today, though, is we will be in regards to the need for more dollars going into public health. We, early in the session in our health committee, heard testimony by the health department about the epidemics and the pandemics that we've experienced over the years. One very large pandemic in the early 1918, where many, many people died. We heard testimony of the near miss that we had this last winter, when the flu vaccine was late in arriving, and we were lucky that the bug didn't get here until after the vaccine arrived. And so we were trying to anticipate what we might do in the future to better coordinate, but it comes down to a matter of dollars. We've also heard of the tuberculosis events that are happening, and you'll hear that about Lane County, where we have 90 people who are at the Eugene Mission who have tested positive for tuberculosis. Now, that is very, very scary. I think that the public health department, in light of the fact that people can bring in bugs from all over the world, a lot of travel, a lot of new dangers in the medical field, and unless we have adequate funding to nip them in the bud, so to speak, we're going to be in big trouble. So with that, I will stop and turn it over to either Karen Gillette or Dr. Sarah. Dr. Sarah.
Madam Chair, Senators, Representative, I'm Dr. Sarah Hendrickson. I'm the Lane County Public Health Officer. I've been part-time public health officer for the last 2.5 years. I was a family physician in private practice for almost 2 decades before that, until my retirement, and I took the public health part-time job in part for public service. I certainly didn't do it for the money. You who are performing public service for similarly inadequate salaries can probably identify with that. I know how private medicine works. I'm finding out how public medicine works. Believe me, public health is not in competition with private practice in these areas. Health departments, by tradition, look at the big picture. we monitor the infectious, the contagious diseases that come through a community which could easily spread to the general population. Mm-hmm. By its very nature, that's the big picture that a physician working in an office taking care of individual patients doesn't see. And that's not that physician's job. Infectious diseases, contagious diseases, many of them are reportable by law. That means that any physician who diagnoses that disease must let the local and state public health departments know that that disease exists. Our public health nurses, and there aren't nearly enough of them, are the folks who investigate every case of contagious disease, reportable contagious disease. These nurses identify the disease, they find out what it is, they find out when it occurred, they look at where this disease may have come from or spread from. They help us decide whether the health department needs to take action, to take public action, to take an action in the community to prevent that disease from spreading to uninfected folks, to spreading to your constituents. Some examples of our day-to-day work in public health are, do we need to work with, or do we need to even close temporarily a restaurant that's been identified with an outbreak of viral dysentery? And we had an outbreak of gastrointestinal illness related to a Lane County restaurant that affected 90 people had it not been for our nurses' quick action, overtime action on a late Friday afternoon. That restaurant could have, and that employee could have continued to spread that illness to a number of other folks. Hundreds become significant. How infectious is the spouse of a foreign student at the university who's been diagnosed with an unusual parasitic disease? We often act as the reservoir of information for the private physicians in the community. We decide whether the disease is being treated correctly, whether this person is no longer contagious. We educate them about how not to spread the disease to their family, to their cohort. Another question that came up when the unfortunate event of the death of a college student at the U of O, do we need to vaccinate college students for meningitis? Do we need to vaccinate? Do we simply need to answer all the dozens and dozens of phone calls from the public who ask us why shouldn't they be vaccinated or have they been exposed to this student? Do we need to close a daycare? Do we need to close a school where a case of measles has been reported? Who keeps track of the vaccinations? Who closed them? And then we answer the phones for every single worried parent who wants to know the complete rationale for how we made our decision.
Have you closed daycare for measles or measles outbreak?
We can close.
That's not my question.
We have restricted students from returning to school or daycare because they are not adequately immunized for a disease, yes. We've not actually closed a daycare since I've been public health officer in Lane County. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
The critical recent question that Representative Morissette told you about is the tuberculosis outbreak at our homeless shelter. There have been similar outbreaks in other homeless shelters in Oregon, in Washington, in California. Who is infectious? Who can spread TB to others? And these are folks who often don't give a good medical history. They're constantly moving residents. You can imagine what it's like to try to take a medical history from folks who live in homeless shelters. Our public health nurses watch these poor fellows take every single dose of their tuberculosis medication because directly observed therapy is the standard of care and the only way that we are going to keep tuberculosis epidemics from spreading. These are the same nurses who order these medications from the state health division, who packet them individually, who get them out to the mission, who get them into these folks if they're still at the mission, or our staff chases them out, whether they're living under a bridge in the bushes in the park or somewhere else. We find them, we give them their tuberculosis medication. The decision, when should we spend money to house somebody who is capable of spreading TB in a local flea bag, sometimes motel or anywhere? How do we decide who deserves that housing? How do we decide how to protect the public? And then there are, of course, all the sexually transmitted diseases, which are constant and always there. We conduct the clinics, we conduct the case evaluations, we conduct follow-ups, so that those diseases do not spread into the general community. When the health department does our job right, you guys shouldn't be hearing about us at all. We should be mostly invisible. You and your constituents and your constituents' children and your constituents' families aren't catching tuberculosis or measles or viral dysentery. They're not catching the diseases that are prevented by vaccination, the diseases that are spread by fecal-oral contamination, by not washing your hands after you go to the bathroom, the diseases that affect people in countries that aren't as lucky as we are, and those diseases that appear first in the sick and homeless population. Our staff is, I think, very competent, and I'm certainly convinced that they're hardworking, but there simply aren't enough of us. Manager Gillette will tell you about the specific limited personnel resources. Our staff at the point there where we are now can be overwhelmed by a single outbreak. The staff there has enough personnel time to manage the STD clinics, to manage routine calls and visits. When something like the meningitis or TB happens, there simply aren't enough hours in the day to do the job that ought to be done. We can't do everything we ought to do, much less find the time to get out and educate the involved people about how not to continue to spread the disease. The public health improvement plan that you're hearing about is, I believe, really a bare minimum to keep Oregonians safe. I can speak specifically for Lane County. I think this is a bare minimum. I understand that that's not really the way to do politics. We're supposed to come here and say, oh, we want all this money and be happy to settle for a little bit. The improvement plan that you're facing here really is a bare minimum. This is what we need. We need your support. Thanks.
Madam Chair, committee members, for the record, I'm Karen Gillette, Program Manager with Lane County Public Health and a member of the executive team for the Conference of Local Health Officials. I'm speaking today in support of the public health system and the opportunity we have to improve that system through the proposed public health improvement plan. And we've known of several issues coming for us through the years and have requested funds specifically regarding communicable disease for several years. In the fall of 2000, the Oregon Health Division coordinated assessment of the local health department's capacity to meet the communicable disease needs within each county. Each county was then asked to identify the gaps in services and to support a public health and to submit a public health improvement plan for their county. In Lane County, our plan focused on communicable disease prevention and control. I became the manager of Lane County Public Health in 1995. At that time, we had 28 staff to serve a population of 301,900. This included approximately 4 FTE professional staff for the communicable disease program. Since that time, although we have increased our total public health staff to 63 due to other program expansions, we have not received funding to increase the staffing for our communicable disease program. As of April 2000, the Portland State Center for Population Research and Census has estimated our county population to be 322,959. This population increase is critical because it does represent an increasing diversity in our county and focuses on the core function of public health to assure access to medical care for our citizens. The Lane County Public Health Improvement Plan, with the funding we are requesting, which is over and above what was not included in the governor's budget, would provide us with 5 staff and an increase in hours for 2 staff to provide directly observed therapy, or DOT, for all cases of active TB, provide community education for communicable disease prevention, provide a community-wide hand-washing campaign to decrease the risk of foodborne and fecal-oral disease transmission. It would increase educational outreach to schools, restaurants, daycare centers, and nursing homes regarding foodborne illness prevention, and increase immunization in sexually transmitted disease clinics. If the plan is not funded, we simply will not be able to expand our communicable disease program to meet these identified needs. We will continue to face the deficiency of resources at the local level, while at the same time the demand for providing a comprehensive approach to infectious disease prevention and control is increasing. And the public does expect us to respond in a comprehensive and effective manner. By enhancing our ability to provide public health education in the community, we will be able to have a more effective prevention effort with our partnering agencies, medical providers, and citizens. Thank you.
I have a question, because you have, as one of the items or one of the issues that you would address if you had an increase in funding, was the campaign to decrease the risk of foodborne and fecal oral disease transmission, and you also have education outreach to schools and restaurants and so forth. Do you license and do you receive a fee from your restaurants in Eugene, in Lane County?
Chair Wenders, we do have restaurant inspections and fees from the restaurants to support their license.
Are they sufficiently paying their payment to take into consideration those activities that you mentioned? Because in Marion County, the restaurants and that particular activity is sufficient to handle the kinds of issues that you're raising. So I'm just kind of curious as to what's your rate in Lane County.
Chair Wenders, what the restaurant license remittances provide us with the 5 sanitarians that are 4.5 FTE sanitarians we have. What we would want to do is do more community-wide and more in-depth campaigning and a different structure and classes in teaching the employees who work in the food industry about proper hand washing. So we're looking at more of a community-wide, and the receipts that we receive now isn't enough to suffice to...
But you do have the ability, don't you, through your county to adjust those fees?
Chair Winters, we do, and we did that about a year and a half ago.
Senator Yee.
Well, we appreciate your presentation, but due to limited resources, we can't fund all the needs. So if we ask you to prioritize your 5-point programs that you believe need two more FTEs, can you prioritize for us what would be the top 3 most urgent programs that you believe would be effective?
Chair Wenders, Senator Yee, I want to clarify, are you asking of the 5 staff and the extra hours for the 2 of which, of the work that they would do, which programs I would prioritize for our county?
Yes, you're asking for 5 staff and an increase in 2, increased hours for 2 staff to do these 5 programs. I just want to know if you can prioritize these 5 programs for us.
Chair Winters and Senator Yee, this comes pretty much as a package in some regards. I think that actually the direct observed therapy would probably be one of our highest priorities to put in. That would entail those 5, some of the 5 staff, and the hand washing, getting out more of a communicable disease prevention, and probably working in the schools, daycares, and nursing homes. Dr. Hendrickson might have a couple of comments about that.
Our immediate and acute need right now is in tuberculosis control. We would not have as large an outbreak as we have had we had more professional staff whose job was to oversee the job they were doing, to sit back and look at it on a regular basis to say, oops, there are more cases at the mission, rather than to be hurling from one job to the next without adequate time for exactly that sort of data gathering and reflection on the data which was gathered.
Representative Bates.
Good morning, doctor. Thank you for coming in. I, too, have had to work at times with the type of transient people you're talking about. And I found that trying to track them down and get them medical care is a fairly ineffective way of doing this. You may have found it differently. Mine is very anecdotal. Commonly, I will back up an emergency room at Rogue Valley Hospital or Providence Hospital. One of these transit people come in with some type of illness or a communicable disease. We see them in the hospital for 2 or 3 days. We send them to a safe home. They usually stay there a couple of hours, and then they abscond, and they're gone. And they often leave the state, leave the county. We can't trace them. Now, the problem I believe we're dealing with tuberculosis is probably fairly similar. We have a large reservoir now of tuberculosis in our community, I believe, is growing, and you probably have good data to support that. Have you considered the possibility when someone is discovered to have tuberculosis, that patient should be taken and placed in a safe position where they cannot abscond, where they're given their medication for 60 days and then released, instead of trying to track these people down all over the county, knowing that many of them on the I-5 corridor will not be there when you go to look for them after 2 weeks or 3 weeks, and you lose your ability to treat these people when they continue to carry this reservoir of tuberculosis. What I'm suggesting is that the program you presently have in place, while it's very humane, is still a danger to the public, and we're not getting the job done. It's probably expensive. I mean, sending nurses out to look under trees and bridges for people, I don't believe is an effective way of controlling tuberculosis.
I agree with you completely. And our staff member who does the delivery to patients, knowing where they are, is not an RN and receives considerably less salary, although sometimes I think she deserves more. We have the legal ability.
Go ahead. I am going to, and I was just reminded that we have a joint session at 10 o'clock this morning. So I'm going to request, in order to get everyone in, that when you come forward, to keep your comments to about 2 to 3 minutes, because if we're going to get everybody through the testimony, I will let you complete what you started to say.
We can lock them up. It's real hard to do. It's hard to do politically. It's hard to do legally. We will do that if we have an active patient who refuses treatment. The standard of treatment for tuberculosis throughout the nation, and as a result of a tuberculosis outbreak in New York City that got out of hand really fast, is directly observed therapy. And directly observed therapy, watching them take their pills wherever they are, if you can't get them into the health department, taking them to them, is the national public health standard. And that's just how it's best done according to research efforts. I'd be happy to provide you with some information if you'd like.
Thank you. Representative Morris, Marcette, thank you for coming. And Representative Mona Anderson, would you please come?
While they're coming up, Madam Chair, we would appreciate getting some data regarding the tuberculosis outbreak. For Lane County and for the state.
In fact, I think we can ask to give us a statewide breakout. Would you?
Oh, and maybe countywide.
Yeah, countywide.
Awesome. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Oh, yes.
And members of the committee, I'm Lori Monis Anderson, a state representative from District 22, Gresham. I'm very happy to be here because I'm speaking about one of my loves, my children first, but then public health second. And there are two basic areas that I'm going to focus on right now. And my love in public health is actually where emphasis should be put is pregnant women and children, and that I'm going to be focusing on school-based health clinic funding as well as some funding for WIC. I'm here in support of funding for the Women, Infants, and Children program. As a nurse, I know firsthand how important it is for an early healthy start in life, as well, and so that involves the pregnant woman as well as children after they are born. Through the WIC program, Oregon helps some of its most at-risk citizens begin a healthy lifestyle by providing nutritious foods, health screening, and education. And these at-risk Oregonians are women, infants, and children living at or below the federal poverty level. While Oregon does receive federal funds for WIC, small caseload changes that push expenditures beyond the funds available can create an overdraw from the pool of federal money. And for fear of running out of money, then the program staff is forced to turn away new participants each year because the program has no reserve funds to cover these changes. An example of fluctuating costs is exhibited in varying costs of groceries or when the groceries submit their receipts. When a woman participates in the program, buys groceries with her food stamps, the cost of each purchase does vary from store to store. And the consequence of price variations is that WIC cannot precisely budget and must closely monitor caseload levels for any changes. By increasing WIC funding by $1 million, we would provide WIC a cushion, and the program could use all of its allocated federal funds in years when caseload levels exceed expectation. In years that existing caseload levels do not exceed expectations, we would enable WIC to keep its doors open to new participants, hundreds more women, infants, and children, or expand innovative programs like the WIC Farmer Markets Program. And all of our Oregon's children and mothers should have access health screening, access health screenings, nutrition assessments, and to staples like milk, juice, and cereal. So I do urge you, when you're considering the human resources budget, that you support women. Don't forget our women, infants, and children. And if you don't mind, I'll just switch over to say a little bit. You have another handout on school-based health clinics. I'm also here to urge you to funding for Oregon school-based health centers. There are 44 centers that currently serve students from kindergarten through 12th grade, with comprehensive free care that is uniquely accessible because it's provided in schools. School-based health centers are staffed by nurses, by nurse practitioners, office assistants, and counselors. And they serve students who have bumps and bruises, conjunctivitis, sprained ankles, sexually transmitted diseases. By teaching students how their behavior affects their health, they do provide risk assessments and they provide direct medical care and services. Our adolescents are least likely to be insured and the least likely to seek care in traditional care settings. That's what's so unique and great about school-based health clinics. Care providers, students, and parents support school-based health centers from around the state. They can share with you numerous stories about how the centers are better off for their children with a school-based health center. Without funding, many of these centers are going to have to close their doors, and therefore many students are going to be going without health care. And I think one of our goals is to make sure that we have a very important learning environment, and they learn best when they are well and well-fed. Therefore, I want you to remember, we do rank 40th in the nation for providing school nursing services. Please keep that in mind when you're considering the funding for school-based health centers as well as WIC. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Mona Sanderson.
I brought, there are some other people testifying. I didn't know what
no,
order.
No, my order, well, I will take individuals who are with more than 100 miles from Salem, and then we will bring the others up.
Madam
Thank you.
Chair, I know we're in a hurry. I just want to comment to Representative Mona Sanderson. I think your attire is fantastic today in honor of the Fairweather Lewis.
Maybe she's Dr. Quinn today.
I'm Dr. Quinn. Yes, I don't ordinarily dress this way, but it is Lewis and Clark Expedition Celebration, and I want us to also remember that there are many women, pregnant women and children that died because of not adequate health care, and we want to make sure that we give adequate health care to our constituents here in Oregon. So please look carefully at the funds and be very generous. Thank you.
She learned a lot coming over in the covered wagon. Charles Dittone, Dittonato, and with him is Judith McCaskill.
Yeah, Obama. See in the front, you can't see.
Ladies first.
And I believe Victoria. Barbara? Is she here from Jackson County? Go ahead. She's coming up.
Go ahead and begin.
You can go ahead.
Oh, great. Madam Chairman and members of the committee, I hope you bear with me today. This is my first time of testifying, so I went over this quite extensively during the night, and I'll probably forget half of it. I'm testifying on behalf of Public Health. I'm a program manager.
State your name for the
My name is Judith McCaskill, and I'm a program manager at the Josephine County Department of Health and Community Action. And I want to thank you for allowing time to listen to our testimony and our concerns prior to making your final decisions for the budget this year. I think legislators and citizens alike all need to be concerned about our lack of public health funding that we have in our budgets. Although we do appreciate the funding we have, it's not adequate to support our community-based needs. And I'm sure if it's not adequate in Josephine County, it is not adequate in the other counties. Both my husband and I have been a part of Josephine County Health for the past 25 years. He's an ER physician. I've worked for Services for Children and Families, a consultant. I've been a nursing supervisor at a hospital, and I've worked for Josephine County Health for the last 10 years. I'm also part of the multidisciplinary team. I'm on Commission for Children and Families, and I've taken an active role in being a member of the early childhood team that is working on the governor's early childhood plan. I want to stress that in my 25 years, I've worked very closely with public health in all aspects and wherever I was working, and that they've always proven to be experts and helping hands in every area to the families in our community. 20 years ago, just a little after 1 a.m. in the morning, I was supervising a local hospital. A pregnant woman came in and we had a stillborn baby. I was the supervisor. I thought, who do I call? This woman needs some help. And into my mind came Gwen Bowman. Actually, she was a public health nurse back then. She's the administrator for our health department now. She came in the middle of the night. She worked with that woman. And that woman actually started the very first support group for grieving parents in our community. And to me, that's what public health is. And that's still what motivates our staff in being a part of our community. It's imperative that the state budget support public health. It provides case management to some of our highest risk families and children. Without our funding, we're going to lose some of our resources' most valuable assets, and that's our public health nurses.
I will ask you not to read the content because we can.
Okay.
But that you summarize, because if I'm to get everybody in.
Okay.
Thank you.
I'll hurry fast. But that we actually are, we're really concerned that we're going to end up losing our public health nurses. You know, we have a shortage of nurses now. There's a national nursing shortage. We have very few qualified, trained public health nurses, and those nurses are beginning to look in other areas to find educational and working opportunities. Unfortunately, once we lose those nurses, it takes many years of training to have those nurses replaced and ready for service that we have now, and we would really hate to lose those. We're very happy that it looks like we're going to get our baby's first money back. We were very concerned because we had children that were subsequent birth families, even though the governor's budget focuses on first birth families. We have many subsequent birth families that have high-risk children that we have referrals from private physicians in our area and from hospitals. And without that baby's first money, we would not be able to see those. Our budget in Josephine County is so tight that we do not have wiggle room to see those. The school-based health centers, we're very concerned about the school-based health centers. We have one in Illinois Valley that is very active. We have children that come into that clinic every day. They learn to trust the nursing staff in that school setting. And in such a high-risk area, many of those kids aren't seen by anybody else. I want to refer to my paper when you're reading about a 16-year-old that was raped just last week that came to the school-based health center. Those kids know that they can come to a public health nurse there, and very often the only intervention they have is through our clinic. We provide case management for so many cases. We provide immunizations. We work on a one-to-one basis with our community partners, and I want to stress how much we are trying to partnership to prevent overlaps in services. We are really working hard in our early childhood committee to make sure that nobody's going out and serving the same client with the same kind of services, and that's our absolute priority. We're working very hard to prevent that. And the other, I'll wrap up by saying that the other thing we were very concerned about is that the public health mental health infrastructure plan was not funded this year or was not added into the state budget. We worked very hard in that plan too to make sure that services looking at depression and mental health for folks would be covered from the mental health side, but from the public health side and with our other partnerships in our community. And it was viewed as a high priority from the AOC. So I would like to wrap up by saying that we really ask your support.
Mr. Dodato, and then would Senator Castile come up and she can replace your seat there?
Okay.
Okay. Good morning. Good morning to all of you. I am speaking today very briefly about the Josephine County Health Department. I am not a doctor. I am a doctor, but not of a medical doctor. I am a pastor. I am currently serving as the chairman of the Josephine County Board of Health. I have been on the Board of Health for a number of years, and I, although I do not have expertise on various diseases, I see a lot and hear a lot. The church that I am pastoring was the first church to take in the Head Start program about 11 years ago. When the government asked the churches to open up, we did. We still have them. And so I see people who are underprivileged, who need help, and these are wonderful people. I guess my point to you is basically this. The federal government allows X amount of dollars, and it's like the Pentagon. They give X amount of dollars and give the plans on how to proceed with a various project like we had many years ago during World War II and whatever. But the Pentagon has to filter down to the local generals, so to speak, and that would be you guys. And then you would filter down to the local health departments, and that would be this lady that just spoke to you and these other professionals. It all boils down to, if we do not get the support and the work by the locals, then all the other plans are useless. And as I have seen, and I have been around Josephine County for 17 years, after coming to the Capitol for the first time today, this is, I may never get out. So you'll be praying for me as I get on the road to get back to where I really want to be. I want to be very brief and say this. Josephine County Health Department is doing amazing things with what they have. But they're at the point where we see a lot of money, a lot of our county money, going toward law enforcement, which it should. But it's the second most important thing in the county. A sick policeman can't service anybody. And I have personally known of cases, I will not go through cases, but I've personally known where we have had somebody come in and they didn't have a gun, they came into our county, they didn't have a knife, they didn't have a club. All I had was a cough, and that cough caused 159 people to get tuberculosis. If it wasn't for the health department, if it wasn't for their quick action, we would have had a major problem. We have areas in our county, like the Illinois Valley area, where we have a lot of people who live out there who really don't have a lot of trust in the local departments of any kind. They don't trust government. And so basically, those nurses out in those counties become their friend first before they can even administer any sort of drugs to them or any sort of help to them. And the point that I'm bringing to you now is simply, the health department's going to have to make some major decisions. And one of those decisions is to pull those nurses back. We have cut down the nurses. What we used to have, we don't have anymore. And now we're getting to that point where we're going to have to pull back into Grants Pass itself. That's a tragedy. And those ladies, many of them, I just met three of them yesterday, walking out of the health department, getting their children immunization. And they had to pool themselves together to get to the county to get that immunization. I thank you, and I thank you for your time.
Thank you. Senator Castillo.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Susan Castillo, State Senator from District 20 in Eugene. And I'm here today to speak in support of Senate Bill 941, which is asking for additional funding for the WIC program to help increase the access for the families who receive the WIC vouchers to be able to use those vouchers at our farmers markets and have more access to fresh fruits and vegetables. At the very core, and what the whole WIC program is about, is helping families with nutrition and helping to ensure that the children in low-income families are living with good nutrition in their lives. And this is a proposal that really tries to take more advantage of the federal funds that are currently available for the program. We currently invest $100,000, and we get for that investment $233,000 from the federal government. If we increase that by $60,000 and invested $160,000, we could get back from the federal government $373,000 for that investment. And at the same time, we could also be helping more families get access to fresh fruits and vegetables and create more of a market for our local farmers and create more of a market for those farmers markets. So it seems to be a win-win proposal for all of us, because as we all know, we all benefit from those investments in families who need additional help by helping to produce healthier families and helping them not have to turn to public assistance in the long term. So I'm here to just encourage your support. I know before your committee are just a whole long line of proposals that you're having to look at and weigh in our very difficult budget situation, and I just ask that you please seriously consider this one.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Barber.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name
and
is...
And I thank you for coming all the way from Jackson County.
Thank you. My name is Victoria Barber. I'm a nurse, and I'm the division manager of Jackson County Public Health Services, and I'm located in Medford, Oregon. And this is my first opportunity to be here, and I apologize for the lack of written comments. I am here to speak on behalf of funding for school-based health centers. The funding has been removed from the Department of Human Resources budget in the upcoming budget year, and I am requesting consideration for inclusion of that. Jackson County, as Representative Anderson commented earlier, there are 44 school-based health centers in the state of Oregon, one of the largest number in states across the country. Seven of those health centers are located in Jackson County. The oldest of those has been operating since 1986, concurrently during that whole period of time. And we serve students also from kindergarten through 12th grade. There is a variety of funding that goes together to keep those centers operating, but the state funding of those centers is absolutely essential to the continuation of services being provided there. Without the state funding, at least five of those seven centers would close in the upcoming school year. We serve thousands of students every year, and with a variety of very, very important services, we provide a large number of immunizations, we provide a large amount of mental health service. Our mental health provider at the elementary school is as busy as they are at any of the other grade levels. Our interest is in trying to create healthy young people that are going to grow up into healthy adults by identifying health problems early, helping those children connect with the resources they need to resolve these problems early in their life. The range of problems that children present at school with is incredibly varied. We see children that are suffering from eating disorders, anorexia, children that are contemplating suicide, elementary-age children that are in homes that are violent, where they're being abused, where they lack the most essential things to just get by day to day. And our staff there works very, very hard to work with the school, to work with other resources, to work with the families, to work with these children's private physicians to make sure that they have the care they need to stay healthy and, again, grow up into successful adults. So I'm asking your consideration of funding for school-based health centers in the human resources budget. And thanks for your time.
Thank you very much. Senator Reed. Real quick. Thank you very much for your presentation, Victoria. I'm interested to know, do you charge for your immunization services?
We do. Again, when there is a variety of funding that funds all of our centers, it does include billing insurances and charging students when they're able to pay for the service. So some of the services are reimbursed, but there are students where the families simply don't have the resources.
What about for the low-income people with no insurance? Do you still charge, or do you give it to them free of charge?
Right. Again, all of our immunization services, we attempt to collect fees where we can, but the services are, nobody has refused service for the inability to pay for them. So we certainly provide, I would say probably half of all the immunization services we provide are done without any charge to the patient.
Jeffrey Street and Gail, and Commissioner Gene Cowan.
Good morning. My name is Jerry Street. I am the Director of Health.
Jerry, I'm sorry. I changed name this morning.
I figured it out. Thank you. I'm the Director of Health and Human Services for Jefferson County, and I appreciate the opportunity to visit with you this morning for a few moments. I came over as a partner with the Department of DHS, OHD. At the local level, we have the challenge, the privilege, depending on how you look at it, of implementing state policy and state programs, even though we're not really part of the state system. So as a partner, I feel we have a vested interest in what happens within the Oregon Health Division. However, the main reason I felt it important to take the time and come over today was to talk about the issues that we're seeing locally and the concerns that we have as it relates to the health issues within the county. Last fall, we did a public health improvement plan. And in that plan, we identified several areas where we had shortfalls within the community. Those included such things as drug and alcohol issues, the need for school-based health clinics, accidental injuries, and the high rates that we have within the counties, youth suicide, et cetera, et cetera. However, the number one priority that we saw was communicable disease. And the lack of response capabilities that we had within the department.
He's right here on her.
As a partner, I support the budget for the Oregon Health Division. However, that budget needs to go further. We are in locally a crisis situation, rapidly developing meltdown within our public health infrastructure. For years, administratively, we have chased funding streams, developed revenue sources that built infrastructure within the department to allow basically a bleed over to cover communicable disease issues. Those funding sources are drying up, they're becoming more restrictive, the demands are increasing, and we're no longer able to do that. And to give you an example, this week was meeting with the nurses, and we got talking about, nurse mentioned that they had seen a couple of cases of very young children that have converted to positive TB. In discussing it, looks like we've got about 8 or 10 that we're now trying to go back and find out where they were because we didn't really have a tracking system. We really don't have the time to do that. Right now we feel we've got a TB problem within the county. And we really don't have the resources to track that down and to follow up on it. So in closing, I would ask that your committee recognize the local need for communicable disease control and resources and help us with that.
Thank you. Commissioner.
Good morning. Chair Winters and members of the committee, my name is Jean Cowan. I'm a county commissioner from Lincoln County. And as an individual, I've long supported the whole continuum or system of health care for our income-eligible individuals in the state, be that the Oregon Health Plan, the Safety Net Clinics, or public health. But today I'm here speaking on behalf of the Association of Oregon Counties and representing our public health initiative because I feel so strongly that public health is a system, is a piece of our system that is so often overlooked. At the local level, we are very well aware of the struggle to maintain the public health system, which is capable of protecting our constituents, and you've heard some powerful testimony to that issue today. AOC, as an organization, does support the Department of Human Services budget, but we are very concerned about the unmet needs that it does not address. And we've spoken before that as we were directed, we did our homework. We took an in-depth look at the public health system. We detailed the gaps. And we proposed a solution to that problem. Those needs were recognized in the original Department of Human Services budget, but they were not recognized in the governor's budget. This ability to provide a comprehensive public health service system at the local level is so important to the health of our citizenry that filling the identified gaps became one of AOC's major priorities this session, and I have provided for you a copy of our health improvement initiative. Now, as an individual, I often feel that public health is one of those invisible pieces of service delivery. We simply don't recognize that it's there until it's gone. It's the first line of defense against infectious disease, and many, many Oregonians are falling through the cracks. Infectious diseases, hepatitis, tuberculosis, sexually transmitted diseases are still with us, and we must address these issues. The safety of the restaurants we eat in, the pools where we swim, the water we drink, those should be things that we can all take for granted. Local capacity to assess the health of our communities, develop policies to improve community health, and assure quality health systems is eroding. I've also offered to you a letter from Coos County, who is considering handing public health back to the state because they can't afford it in their own general fund. That's really scary. With the limited dollars, our staffing is stretched to the limit, and we often ask our nurses to cross over from their fields of expertise into other areas just to address the specific issues that we have at any given time. Despite increasing expectations, no funds have been provided for disease prevention and control in either 97 or 99 legislative sessions. Yet in 99, there were 43 outbreaks in 21 counties, 4 multi-county and 2 multi-state outbreaks of just hepatitis A. In Lincoln County, we had 2 outbreaks of tuberculosis in a very short period of time that stretched our staff so far to the limit. Had they happened at the same time, we would not have been able to address the situation. We know that there's a history of legislative direction to address public health and mental health needs via the tobacco settlement. And we recognize very well the challenges to both the state and local level in general fund revenues. For that reason, we are respectfully encouraging you to towards responsible, accountable use of tobacco settlement dollars by dedicating a portion of those to address our needs in public health and mental health. It's the right thing to do for improved health protection for Oregonians. Thank you for your time this morning.
Dr. Alan Melnick.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Dr. Alan Melnick. I'm the health officer for Clackamas County, and I'm vice chair of the Coalition of Local Health Officials. I want to thank you for allowing me to come before you this morning. I know it's a tight schedule, and I'll try to be really brief. Last year, the Department of Human Services asked county health officials to develop public health improvement plans, and I've circulated the result of that process. These plans that we developed identified the gaps in essential public health capacity, and especially in the areas of communicable disease control and prevention. Unfortunately, the governor's budget does not include the funding necessary to address those gaps, and that's why we're before you here this morning. In speaking, I want to address some of the questions that some of you had earlier this morning. Chair Winters, you had a question about foodborne transmission, and my answer to that is actually restaurants are probably the safest place to eat in the state right now because of our programs. The problem is,
Madam Chair, would you please state your conflict of interest?
I have to declare a conflict of interest. I'm a restaurant owner.
And I'm not just saying that because you are one, but I guess that's helpful. They're safe because of our programs. Actually, my concern, I don't like going to potlucks for the most part because I think most people in the community really don't know how to prevent foodborne transmission. And right now in Clackamas County, I'm dealing with hepatitis A in a family that was, I'm sure, was not from a restaurant, but they've transmitted among themselves. So the funding here is for more community education. I think we have a long way to go in those gaps in terms of educating. We've done a good job with the restaurants. We really need to do a better job community-wide in educating people on how to avoid foodborne illness transmission. The other question, Chair Winters, that you had about closing daycares, and my answer to that is, gives you some idea of what we have to deal with on a daily basis. I intentionally try not to close daycares, and the reason for that is kids in those daycares have already been exposed. We close down the daycare, what happens to those kids? They go to some other daycare where they can potentially expose other children. So what we try to do, and this is labor intensive, is what we try to cohort or separate those kids within the daycare so they continue to go to that daycare, but they're not out in some other daycare in the community potentially exposing other kids. And that's why we try not to close them down. I want to reply to Representative Bates' question about why we don't put people in protection for 60 days. A couple of reasons for that. One, a lot of these people are homeless. We put them someplace where they're in protection. They're likely to expose other people, especially in kind of a jail-like situation. We have found, and actually studies have shown, that positive incentives work really well with these patients. We can track them down because we offer them positive incentives. Sometimes that's money, but we can track them down and get them in. And by using positive incentives, we avoid having them put other people at risk that they would be doing if we incarcerated them, for example. A couple more comments, and then I'll stop. A lot of people have concerns about what's the difference between safety net and public health. And on this handout I gave you, it's a two-sided one, so recommend taking a look at both sides. The best way I can explain this is imagine a river, and people are drowning in this river. And you could think of them drowning from something like tuberculosis or meningococcal disease. The role of the safety net agencies is to treat them, to pluck them out of the river and make sure they're treated and protect and taken care of. Not all the people get plucked out of the river. Some of them drown. The role of the public health system is to look upstream and figure out why people are falling into the river in the first place and take protective action. So, for example, with meningococcal disease or tuberculosis, the safety net agencies may treat those folks. Public health agencies look upstream, investigate each case, find out who their contacts might be, and make sure that their contacts don't fall into the river or get the disease themselves. On the last page, on the back of this sheet I gave you, my concept is, I guess a stool is a bad concept, maybe a four-legged table, and you think of these legs as one being the Oregon Health Plan that provides coverage, one is the safety net agencies that diagnose and treat and report to health departments communicable disease. The other piece is the public health a leg of the stool, which, as I mentioned just a moment ago, analyzes, investigates, detects, controls communicable disease, and also educates the public. And we do work with the safety net agencies to make sure that identified patients get treated. Mental health is another part of this, another leg of the table, and you'll be hearing more about that. But certainly mental health programs help us in our communicable disease control situation because, and I gave you an example here, a lot of those patients are at risk of communicable disease, and getting them treated helps reduce those risks. So, again, the governor left this out of this budget. I hope that you'll see that we have some significant gaps that need to be taken care of, and I thank you for allowing me to speak with you.
Question, do you license your restaurants in your county?
Yes.
And then you control the fees in your county?
Right? Yes.
And I do agree with you that that you do need to educate the public, because I'm sure that they don't realize that those cutting boards are more contaminant. And of course, in the restaurant industry, we do know about cross-contamination and some of those issues. And I do agree that it is a public educational issue. So I want to thank you for that, not just because I'm a restaurant. Representative Carlson, and I need to call. I think that Representative, she's back in the back.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There was a handout that we just got from Nikki Witte from Coos County. Is that she's not here, evidently?
That's correct.
Can you handed that out?
Mm-hmm.
I just had a couple questions on that. One is that I noticed that it's a pretty clear chart about the revenue sources that are available in the program expenditures and the shortfall that Coos County is experiencing in their public health department. And it just occurs to me that Coos County tends to be a smaller rural area. Do you see the role of the health departments being different in rural areas where people have less options in terms of medical care than they would be, say, in a Clackamas County or Multnomah County? Do you see do health departments play kind of a unique role in rural areas compared with urban areas?
Representative Carlson, because I can speak more to the rural counties than the metropolitan, I would certainly say that, yes, that is true. We are the place of last resort, if you will. In Lincoln County, and I don't live in Coos County, and I can't speak to their specifics, we have a great deal of difficulty with access to medical care, a large population of Medicare, Medicaid individuals, and no provider, no insurer for the Oregon Health Plan. So consequently, a lot of things fall to our health department that might be addressed in other ways. We currently put up approximately $650,000 of general fund money into primarily public health from our limited general fund, and that's getting very difficult to hold on to. I can certainly empathize with Commissioner Whitty that kind of a transfer from a revenue stream that's ever decreasing at the local level as well is very difficult.
Yeah.
Thank you. Representative Vicki Walker, I need to move us along. And if you have some questions of the individual members, would you please get the question to the witnesses, and we'll share them with the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Vicki Walker, State Representative for House District 41, representing Eugene, Springfield, and Coburg. And I'm here today during your public testimony to testify about a program that was not included in the governor's budget, like so many, unfortunately. But I think this is a valuable program, and I wanted to talk to you about it if you are not aware of it. It's called the State Technical Assistance Team. And the state general funds in 9901 were $619,000. We're asking for $650,000 for the next biennium. And that includes leveraging federal funds for their operational budget. The state technical assistance team was established by the Oregon State Legislature in 1995. And Senator John Minnis, who was then a state representative, sponsored that legislation. He went with Dr. Grant Higginson to Missouri to review their program and came back and convinced the legislature this was a great thing. And I agree with him. What it does is it created a state child fatality review system by providing technical assistance to local child fatality review teams in every county. They maintain a statewide data information system on all unexpected childhood deaths and suicides, and they produce an annual child fatality review report with suggestions for prevention strategies. This program has been essential to the work that I have been doing and the state of Oregon has been doing on youth suicide prevention. The state, if it had it not been for the state technical assistance team, we would not have been able to produce this booklet that you all have been given, the Oregon Plan for Youth Suicide Prevention. As you may know, youth suicide is the second leading cause of death for our young people in the state of Oregon. Last session, we passed HGR 53, which was a resolution that I sponsored to recognize the fact that we needed to make this a state priority. This team has been essential in those activities and in understanding childhood deaths in Oregon. I have also passed out for you an email letter that I received from Nancy Johnson, who has lost a 14-year-old son to suicide, and she could not be here today, and she's extremely active in the work that we do here in Oregon. Some of the other things that STAT has been able to do in the year 2000, an OSP detective, Oregon State Police, I don't see the little pig for the acronyms, testified in Senator Clarno's committee. An Oregon State Police detective reviewed case investigations and found two cases in which disabled children had been neglected to the point they had died because of neglect. Due to the collaboration with the state technical assistance team, local investigators were able to reopen these cases and charges were then filed against the parents. Another OSP detective reviewed a case of an apparent motor vehicle crash fatality and discovered that the fatalities that occurred in a county neighboring where the family resided were probable domestic violence homicides, not an accident. So the detective coordinated with the STAT team, sharing of information across jurisdictions, and spoke with workers at a domestic violence shelter to get information about the family. Other protective services that the team provides, they have a worker engaged in protective service workers in California to track the protective service history on a family who had a previously unknown history of recurring deaths due to SIDS. So they were able to track that family down and help them with that information. Finally, one of the things that the STAT does for Oregon is it assists communities in thinking forward about how child deaths are occurring. To look at those deaths that used to be accepted as fate or as accident and begin to see how to prevent those deaths. I'm also currently working with them on how to prevent deaths in unsafe cribs. I have a constituent whose child died in daycare in an unsafe crib, and I have a number of pieces of legislation this session to try to address that issue. And one of the things that STAT is trying to help me with is to work on the website to provide further information to families about unsafe products for children. So I just want to tell you that I think this program is extremely valuable. They have stood up to the plate with very little money. They've been able to leverage those federal funds to do what they need to do, and I just hope that if we have some small chance of adding back anything in this budget, that you might consider this program.
Thank you, Representative Walker.
Thank you, Chair Winters.
Candle Mueller, Ron Cease. And Liz Smith.
Find out.
Oh, yeah.
I'm part of the advisory committee.
Madam Chairman, did you know Ron Cease went to Jefferson High School?
I know. and I know Ron Cease used to be in this building.
Right, yes. Which Jefferson High School?
That's a school champion, so we're by the county.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, I'm Ron Cease. I'm a former legislator. In fact, I served on this subcommittee, and I empathize with your job. I know it's particularly tough when you've got tremendous needs and not enough money. I have a couple of colleagues who will introduce themselves who are also on the advisory board for the State Health Division, and I'm here in that capacity as chair of that board. I know you've got very limited time, and a number of things that I wanted to say have already been said, but let me make a couple of points and then turn it over to my colleagues. One, I think it would be fair to say that the health division and the functions of health at both the state and local level, the point has been made by a number of others, is not at a very high level in this state in terms of its support. We rank, I think, in the bottom group of states that put great emphasis on public health. We need to do better. And for a state that prides itself on its environmental and other progressive programs, we really rank very poorly in this regard. 1% of the general fund for the whole Department of Human Resources goes to public health. And public health division, and I think it's also true of the local environmental health programs, are some of the few programs within the state and at the local level that emphasize prevention. And unfortunately, when there are money problems, I've watched the legislature over the years, prevention programs are the ones that seem to get cut first, because the attitude is that you're not dealing specifically right at the moment with people, but once you cut these programs and continue to cut them, you end up with a program that's really limping along. Teen clinics, I'm a very strong supporter of teen clinics, as is our advisory board. I've seen the teen clinic issues in budgetary terms over the years. This would be fair, to say that this is not the first time they've been in jeopardy. They've been in jeopardy before, but we've always managed before the session was over to fund these programs. And largely, I think, because they've proven their worth. We have them across the state, but not just in Portland and in the urban areas. We have several in eastern Oregon as well. And I would like to make the point in reference to the $2.5 million that has been left out of the budget for teen clinics. and that is the fact that a number of these clinics, that's certainly true of a few in Portland, are also funded by the county, and if the state does not fund these, it will not simply be state-funded clinics that may go by the board. It will be the other counties, other areas where they get support from other sources. In other words, if we don't provide the money, you start a domino effect, and a number of these clinics will close. As indicated, the young people who use these clinics are frequently from dysfunctional families. They're from not only poor families, but dysfunctional families. And a number of these are young people who have not, since the day they were born, probably seen a doctor or other health specialist. They come to the clinics for aid of all kinds. Partly it's at the age of 14, 15, I think all of the people on this committee, including Senator Yee and in fact, my other former colleagues from the Senate, may remember what it was like when you were 14, 15 years old. And I think it would be fair to say that at that age, you frequently don't know who you are. You don't know what's happening to you. All these juices are flowing through your system, and you're just kind of at a quandary. In reference to sex, the last thing in the world young people need is to take sexual advice from their colleagues, from their peers. They need to go to a nurse, to someone in the clinic, if it means simply holding their hand, that's useful. Some place to go, particularly if they can't get the assistance from their parents. These clinics have proven their worth, and I hope that the legislature will find a way to keep them alive before this session is over.
Are you saying this chronologically advantaged group has forgotten their youth?
It frequently happens. I don't know if it's an advantage. But those of us who had children or grandchildren, I've seen it. I have a granddaughter who's 10, and I see the same thing happening. And she will get assistance from her parents. They do have insurance. But there are a lot of people who don't have a functional family that have insurance. And we need to keep in mind that those people do need assistance.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good morning, Madam Chairwoman and members of the committee. My name is Liz Smith. I am the Policy Director for Children First for Oregon. I will make my remarks very brief. I have handed out my testimony. I just wanted to let you know that I have come here in support of funding for school-based health centers. I just want to note especially what happens when there are not health services available in the schools. I believe this is a safety issue, it is an educational achievement issue, and it is an access issue. And I believe, especially under safety, that if you go into a school where there is no school nurse available, and that is true of 56% of the school districts in our state, you will find school secretaries and attendance office employees doing things from handing out aspirins all the way to feeding children through gastrostomy tubes or suctioning endotracheal tubes. And I think this is a dangerous situation. And I also believe, since 33% of the students who have come to school-based health clinics report that they do not have health insurance, is a critically important access point as a safety net clinic for helping low-income students. So we hope that you will find funding for school-based health centers. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'm going to let, I'm the new kid on the block.
Okay. Yes, okay.
For the record, my name is Candace Mueller, and I'm a public member of the Public Health Advisory Board, and I have very brief remarks. We listen to testimony at every session from people who've been testifying today and others who desperately need help. The public health system in Oregon, from my perspective as a public health advisory board member, is imploding. We need more help, not less, desperately. It looks invisible now, but if it actually implodes, it's not going to be invisible, and it's going to cost a lot more money than prevention will cost. Thank you.
Thank you. Ann Pelletier. Jim Anderson. And Gail Freeman.
Madam Chair, Jim Anderson, Oregon Medical Association. I will allow these two ladies to speak. I have a letter of support for the Health Division. I will simply submit that.
Thank you.
Chair Winters, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Ann Pelletier. I am the Public Health Program Manager for the Linn County Department of Health Services. and I come to testify today in support of the proposed budget for the Department of Human Services, Oregon Health Division. We appreciate the work of our state partners in public health and the support that they offer the counties. The work of keeping communities healthy and safe falls to the local communities. In Linn County, we have identified several gaps in the communicable disease area and our public health continuum of care that is not addressed in this budget. It is addressed, however, in the AOC Health Initiative. I will speak briefly to what inadequacies we found when we did the community assessment for our public health improvement plan last fall. Linn County is unable to provide adequate outbreak response. Linn County is unable to adequately contact persons reported as contacts of communicable diseases. And as we've heard before, this is critical to preventing the spread of the communicable disease and worsening the issue at hand. Linn County is unable to assure consistency of communicable disease case management and follow-through. We have active TB cases. We may not know how many active TB cases we have. The active TB cases we have are those that see the physicians and those that are reported to us. How many more are out there? We don't know. We can't test everybody. Linn County is unable to assure the early detection and treatment of all infectious diseases. This requires outreach to the populations which are at the highest risk for the spread of communicable diseases. Linn County cannot adequately test for and follow up on tuberculosis and hepatitis C. Hepatitis C has been called a silent epidemic. We don't know how many people are out there because we can't test them. We don't have the staff to test them. We do not have the health educators, the staff to go out to all the populations which are at high risk for this disease and to do prevention counseling, to be doing testing, etc. Linn County is unable to meet the growing need for the HIV/AIDS, hepatitis C, tuberculosis, and other communicable disease education and outreach. Linn County has 103,000 residents. We are a 30 by 70 mile county.
I'm going to have to keep you along because this body will be leaving here to go to the floor in about 5 minutes. I apologize, but they have a special session this morning, a joint session starting at 10 o'clock. So if you could summarize for me, I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Linn County is unable to develop a comprehensive approach to provide education and information for the prevention of injury and death due to intentional and unintentional injuries. We're also unable to meet the bilingual, bicultural needs of all these people. Thank you for allowing me to testify today.
Good morning, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Gail Freeman. I represent Marion County Public Health Department, and I serve on the AOPINS committee, which is the Association of Oregon Public Health Nurse Supervisors, and I'm a member of the executive team for the Conference of Local Health Officials. I serve as the maternal child health services supervisor. I'm a nurse at Marion County, and I'm here to testify in support of the Human Resources Health Division budget. And I'm speaking for Marion County and what we have identified in our public health improvement plan as missing links. And one of the things that we identified was that a great preponderance of health problems and most improvements in health care are issues of public health and prevention. And although Oregon is among the most progressive states in the nation with the Oregon Health Plan, it only addresses the medical model and system of payments. It has nothing to say about the public health delivery system. Marion County identified some communicable disease problems that we are real concerned about, and that is continuation of being able to continue monitoring and keeping up with the increasing cases of communicable disease. Most recently, you'll remember the E. coli case in the last 2 weeks of August that took a lot of time and a lot of investigation. There are two nurses on the EPI staff that take, that work full time to take those calls. And it took, the supervisor and me and many of the environmental health staff as well, numerous, hours of overtime to try to keep up with, all of the investigations that were necessary to finally identify the 18 plus cases. Right now in April, we're working on meningococcal disease. Again, there was one nurse on duty when all these calls started coming in, and this has just been going on for the last week and a half, and so far we've identified 4 cases, but she's had over 100 phone calls and investigations to go on. The OARSs tell us that we must respond within 24 hours to these disease investigations. And when this was going on with meningococcal, other cases of Hep A, hepatitis B, and salmonella were coming in. But priorities had to be made, and those things had to be delayed. Tuberculosis, Marion County is one of the leading counties in the state with tuberculosis. Last year we had 12 cases of active TB. We have 155 people on prophylactic medication right now. Again, the TB program has 2 nurses that are trying to provide directly observed therapy. So it's crucial. We need your help in funding for communicable disease for this program. Thank you.
Thank you. I would like to call up, and it will be the last person that we will hear testimony from. And those of you who have written testimony that did not have the opportunity to address this body, if you could give it to us so I can make it a part of the record. But I'd like to call up Don Porth.
Madam Chair,
while
the witnesses are coming up, could we ask the previous 2 witnesses to provide their priority in their program for us? We would appreciate that very much.
Did you hear that request, Mrs. Freeman and Mrs. Yes. Yes. Okay. Thank you. Go ahead.
Good morning, and thank you for the opportunity to testify here today. My name is Don Forth, and I'm a fire and life safety educator for Portland Fire and Rescue. I'm also a member of the state's Child Fatality Review Team, which is professionals that meet 3 times a year to review Oregon's child fatalities. The goal is to find the common threads within this that will lead to the development of a...
And I would appreciate it if you'd summarize for us, because they have 2 minutes to get out of this committee today.
Okay. Well, you have basically those things, and I guess I would just say as a frontline professional working with trying to reduce and prevent injuries and deaths to children, the best tool we have available is information, and I'm here to testify about restoring the funding for the STAT team, the State Technical Assistance Team, because what they've been able to do over the past few years, as was stated earlier, provide very valuable information for professionals like myself. As a firefighter and emergency medical technician, when I arrive at the scene, it's too late. Tragedy has already occurred. Prevention is what it's really all about, and we've heard a lot of pleas for prevention. And what they allow us to do is be more effective at prevention and not allowing these tragedies to occur. So if you could consider that part of it, I would really appreciate it, as well as many other people. So thank you for your time.
Thank you for coming in and presenting the case for us. Would you provide the committee statewide information by county on tuberculosis and the outbreaks, known cases, and what you see as potential? I think this committee would be very interested in knowing what's happening in the state, county by county, on that particular issue. With that, is there any other thing that you'd like to request?
I previously asked for the HIV, STD, and tuberculosis incidents in the state and breakout in counties.
And I would like to, just following along on some questions that Representative Bates had made of the treatment modality for tuberculosis, one, isolation versus whether you still remain in population.
And another matter to note, my recollection of it was a six-month treatment program. Somebody mentioned 60 days, which I went with. I believe it's a full 6 months for treating tuberculosis.
You know, my concern is that, you know, that we make sure that we are treating the individual so that we are controlling the spreading of tuberculosis. So if you can get that information for us, we would appreciate it. If there's no further questions, we are adjourned. And we'll